Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Spotlight Show celebrity segment on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Oh, I'm really excited about our guest. And it's very interesting, my second Real Housewives guest. And another opportunity to promote a foundation that's doing tremendous things. So I want to welcome the program Leah Black from Real Housewives of Miami. Leah, thanks for calling.
Welcome to Miami's world.
Hey, we're used to being welcome to Miami. When I said the connection I have with the Miami Book Fair, but tell us about the foundation, why you started it. I know it's been around for a while, so it's not just once this TV show got going. You've had this going for a while before.
Yeah. You know, about 18 years ago, this will be my 19th year, I started this little fundraiser in my backyard, and it just took on a life of its own after, 18, 19 years. And we raise money every year to give to kids that are at risk that would otherwise probably wind up in jail or in foster care or what have you. And we get them kind of on the right path and teach them right from wrong and hopefully get them in schools and programs and after-school programs. And if we need, get the state involved in a little bit of, structure for them. And we just started doing it so many years ago, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then the last 3 years, I started a foundation called Consequences Foundation, and part of the money we raise goes to that, and that is a program that we're implementing throughout the state and hopefully nationally, where we put a videotape out for kids that when they get in trouble, when they used to just handcuff them and put them straight into jail and mugshot them, even when they're 12 and 13 years old, and then that record follows them forever. So they can now go into this little course and watch this videotape and have an interview and hopefully get a second chance. So we put that video together, and we're trying to get it throughout the state. We have it in 7 locations right now. We're working on getting it in other locations throughout the state, and we're hoping that that'll be a deterrent for the kids. So I basically do, primarily I raise money. That's really what I'm good at. I'm not as good at, managing the programs and the service providing that some other people are. So we're happy to donate the money to the people that are really great at that. And we have some really great organizations that are good at that. But in addition to that, we decided that we would implement this one program because it's so important that these kids find out what their problem is before they get in trouble, not after they get in trouble. Because if they wait until they're in trouble, they're already in the system. So we're trying to prevent it.
Very, very interesting. I think that, again, what you said, you're good at raising money, but especially helping those that are in need. And I think that makes you really feel good, and also to see the success that how you're able to raise money to help those people.
Yeah, I would love to say that, I'm Mother Teresa and I can go out into the schools and into the streets and really work with these kids, but I really don't have that type of training to do that. So what I figured is, since I'm good at raising money and it's easy for me to raise money, well, I'm not saying it's easy. It's simple, but it's hard. That I would put my effort into that and then let the people that are really good at that are really trained in that and committed to it and do it for all the right reasons, let them take that money and stretch every dollar of it as far as they can stretch it. And that's what I've done for almost 20 years.
Here's one interesting point I wanted to ask you is you decided to do this. What do you think gives you the strength that you're really good at raising money? Because I know there are a lot of foundations out there all over the world listening to this interview right now saying, wow, how do you do it?
Well, first of all, I've always had a sales and marketing background, so I've applied that skill set. And then I've also always sort of been a networker with a personality that enabled me, to befriend people easily and take an interest in people and their lives and what makes them tick. And I enjoy that. So I've sort of focused on finding people that line up with my ideas and my vision and also want to have a great social time as well. So I throw a big party and I make them all pay to come to it. And then I entertain them to death so that they can't wait to come again next year. And then we do it again. And the donors have just been amazing because they're people that usually maybe they don't aren't out there looking like philanthropists to just donate to a cause, but if something speaks to them and they like you and they enjoy the party, then they're willing to, you know, come on board. And so we have a nucleus of donors that come year after year, and then of course we look for new people every year for whatever fallout we might have, or what people might be out of town, or people's circumstances change. So I try to get somewhere between 600 and 800 people to show up to this big gala that we do every year, and the biggest part of it is the talent. I mean, that's the hardest part for me, because in 20 years I think I've had to pay for talent twice. The rest of the time I've gotten it donated, and last year I had Tony Bennett and Queen Latifah, and the year before that I had Rick Ross, and no, the year before that I had Pharrell and Pitbull and Dionne Warwick. Wow. And the year before that I had Rick Ross and Natalie Cole and Paulina Rubio, and then before that I had Craig Davis, and I had Lil Wayne, and you know, I've had Barry Gibb, I've had some top talent over the years, but I've really had to dig, struggle, beg, plead, cry. I mean, that's the hardest part, because once you lock down the talent and then the celebrity red carpet where I get celebrities to agree that they'll show up, you know, friends or people that are icons, like, you know, the basketball players or Alex Rodriguez, right, who lives here, and, you know, those kind of people. And you kind of, Pamela Anderson flew in one year and came and helped with the auction. And then you start to line up those types of people, and then it gets easier to get the press. And then when you get the press, it gets easier to get, you know, the donors. So it's a system that I've just created over many years. But my number one difficulty every year is getting, getting the talent. I mean, I'm working right now on talent for this year for April 6th, and I'm basically begged everyone. I almost had Andre Bocelli this year, but he won't be here till June, and I can't do it that late in the season here because a lot of the donors leave. So if I would, otherwise I might have had him. So I'm digging right now for talent. If anybody knows anybody, you can call me.
Well, it's amazing. Tell us how to do this. I mean, because I know for a fact I deal with all types of charities. And a lot of foundations, they say, you know what? We just can't get that celebrity representative. How difficult, you were talking about networking, such a key, but then finally lining it up. So it takes so much time and effort to contact their agent, negotiate price.
Well, if you go through the agent, you're probably not going to get them.
Okay, interesting.
You really have to go either through someone that has a connection to them or someone that owes them, you know, a favor. See, my first big break was when I got Barry Gibb. Well, before that, actually, I got John Takata.
Mm-hmm.
One of my friends is Frank, and he works with the Estefans, and he always helps me, put out feelers. And he helped me get John Takata one year, and that really elevated our charity. And then a year or two later, I was able to get my friend Barry Gibb. You know, I never wanted to ask Barry, but I've known him for years.
Right.
And finally, one day, you know, it's harder to get them when you know them.
Exactly.
So finally, one night we were at dinner, and I said, "Oh, Barry, I wish you would just sing for me one time at our charity event." And he said, "Oh, darling, of course I would sing for you." So I locked him down on the spot, and I was like, "Oh my God, I couldn't believe my luck." He actually did it back when we still had it in our home, and I had 200 people inside the ballroom and another 300 or 400 outside with big live television feeds. And then that made it easier to get the next one. And I don't know, one of my friends knew Natalie personally, and I had met her a couple of times. And, you know, Rick Ross is a local, so, you know, Pharrell is a local. And so, you know, it's either you run into them, or you know someone that knows them, or, you know, you just have to work it. It's not easy. I'm telling you, it's the hardest part of the job.
Well, what I've learned, Leah, in just interviewing celebrities, that I get a lot of times where I create relationships with a B celebrity, and then they get me a larger guest saying, "Oh yeah, let's connect, do different things." So the networking is so important. You're right. Sometimes going through that agent or going through that, you're not always going to get there, because they're going to say that there always will be a stop. But when that celebrity feels that it's not a favor for somebody, or they find out that they finally have their ear, then it's set. And that's what it seems like you've done with the organization, to the point,
you know,
where
the other thing, if you can find people that have kind of a soft spot for your charity, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, some of these people had some problems. You know, they had been in trouble, and they didn't want to see other kids get in trouble. Some of them had their managers, for example, had maybe been in trouble and struggled. And so they had a soft spot for that particular charity. That sometimes helps a little bit, too. Like Pamela Anderson, she said, you know, when she came down and she was helping me with the auction, she said, well, you know, I said, I thank you so much for coming and, you know, helping us. And she said, well, I've always had a soft spot, you know, for Bad Boys. And, of course, you know, I joked back. I said, and the Bad Boys have always had a hard spot for you. But, you know, it was true in that she had seen, you know, bad behavior and where it leads. And sometimes good people just do bad things, and they just need to be redirected or being given the attention that they need or whatever it is that's missing that has them act out like that. So that's part of it, too. You know, of course, you know, a lot of them will do it just because they want to spend a nice weekend in Miami at a luxury hotel. You know what I mean? So we have some advantages in Miami. Miami's a party city. No matter what anybody tells you about Las Vegas, you know, or New York, the city doesn't sleep. I'm sorry. It's Miami. Miami is the 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days out of the year party city. It's the nightclub city, capital of the world. There's not a close second, I'm telling you.
Well, and definitely, I did miss that when I was at the Miami Book Fair International. I was basically interviewing authors for two straight days and exhausted 30 to 32 authors in 2 days. So I didn't get that opportunity when I was in Miami last time. And I was saying, you know, next gala, I'd love to cover it. I'll go down myself. So
well, it's probably April 6th. Our tentative day is April 6th. It'll be either at the Eden Rock or the Fountain Blue, depending on who can accommodate us on that date. And, you know, I'm working on the talent now. And this will be our 19th year. And, oh, my God, can you believe it? And I'm only 29. It's really difficult starting at 10.
But you said you have political connections as well, and this has helped you in the process as well. Knowing certain people always helps you get to that next person, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, you know, like 1 year the governor came and walked the red carpet, and Al Franken came, and I made a film, a documentary called The Fundraiser, and we took it to Cannes and showed it in the market there. And so when I came back to Miami and showed it at the Guzman Theater, and we sold it out, and the tickets were like $100 or whatever, and all that money went to the charity, too. We had some of the kids there that we had helped on the stage. And Al Franken came in and did a 10-minute bit, you know, of laughter, and Star Jones emceed it. And so that helped me promote the fundraiser, which, you know, helped. Every little thing you can do to get attention to the charity helps you. But, you know, probably the second most difficult thing is all the paybacks. Because remember, every one of these people that come and do something for you, if they buy a ticket to your event, if they have an event or a birthday party for their kid or a wedding or a bar mitzvah or a charity luncheon, they kind of expect you to be there. So the paybacks are very time consuming. But what made me think of that is, you know, he didn't ask me to, but after Al Franken did that for me, of course, he later decided to run for Congress, so I was the first one to raise my hand to do a fundraiser for him.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of worked that way.
What I also see that what you do is great. You say, I'm going to make sure I return the favor. And then guess who you end up meeting? More people.
You're right. You do. You're right. I didn't think about that. There's an upside to that, too. You do. You go out and then you meet their friends in their favor, so that's true.
So I was a former professional wrestler, Leah, but I have not really reached out to that to get some major talent for the radio show there. But when my business partner flew me out one time to Kansas City, and I got to meet Hulk Hogan, and I just saw it. Just again, it's these connections. Then you do something for somebody else, and you meet this person, and then it's a domino effect. And I think that's what you did for your foundation, which is fantastic. So again, it's the Blacks Annual Gala. It's going to be in April. You can promote that. Then also tell us a little bit about your business entrepreneurial venture. I'm interested in hearing about that.
Yeah, the Blacks Annual Gala is the blacksannualgala.com, and the Consequences Foundation is also online. And you know what I guess where I got my ability to raise that money was from the time I can remember, I've always worked. And I started a business when I was very young, I mean, like in my 20s, and I did well with it. And then I just kept building on that business. And then when I got married, I had been flying, you know, 150 to 200,000 miles a year and working every trade show. And I had offices Puerto Rico and Santo Domingo and Baden-Baden and Will, Switzerland. And I mean, I had several in Texas. And I just decided that I had been on the treadmill for so long that if I really wanted to seriously be married, I just couldn't do that and have it work. So I sold the company, and I had a non-compete, and I didn't do anything for a while. And that's when I started the charity. And then once my kid, who's now 11, went back to school, first grade, I decided to get back into working again. So I started theworldofleahblack.com, which is my website, and I have my skincare line that I've had for 20 years on there, which I contribute to why my skin is almost flawless for my age. I mean, it sounds like I'm bragging, but it really, really works. It's called Sudden Youth. And then I have accessories and costume jewelry and pocketbooks and scarves and things like that. And, you know, we're getting distribution little by little and exporting. And I just started it up again, maybe not as aggressively and at the same pace I did when I was 20, but I'm working smarter and not as hard now. So we're doing very well, and people love the product. And I featured I didn't feature it on the show, actually. You know, that's right. I was on the Housewife show, and I didn't even bring the product up. How about that? But it's a great product, and I'd love for everybody to go to my website and look at it and give it a shot.
Well, here's the thing. Sometimes when you don't push your product, they're more likely to come because they get to like you. And I honestly have never watched The Real Housewives of Miami. My wife had me hooked on New Jersey because I don't know. Uh-huh. But I'm definitely going to check out. So what's going on? I know the season has ended. Are you going to be
Well, the show ended. Yeah. They did 15 episodes and two reunions and a lost footage. So 18 episodes in all. It ended like a week or two ago. And I hear rumors and rumblings they're having a third season, but no one's officially announced anything. I'm always the last to know anything in that group. Those girls are glued to their Google searches and their computers and their Twitters and their this and their that. I'm just sitting here in my own little world. If somebody knocks on my door, I'll take the call, you know. But I'm here. They're going to have another season. And the show is actually quite entertaining. The producers were called purveyors of pop, and they did a really good job showcasing Miami, and they did a good job, you know, with a diversified cast. And I think the show really was kind of a hit, so they're going to probably do it again.
All right, well, fantastic.
Of course, I think I was the most normal one on the show.
Well, I mean, if you're normal if you're coming on my show. No, maybe if you listen to some of my other education shows, you'd say, oh, my gosh. Because when I go off after public education, I really go after it. But when I interview celebrities, we have a blast. We promote the charity and all the important things. So, Leah, thanks again for calling. Again, I'll have to mark my calendar for April, and if I will be willing to cover it from my studios and maybe interview some people at the event. So we'll have to try to stay in touch, keep in touch, and when you're closer to the event, come back on to promote it.
And I hope you come down here. If you come down here, I promise you, you'll get a lot of interesting interviews just by hanging around people that we know.
Hey, I know.
Bring your microphone.
You know what's funny? You could use that iPhone as your mic, and it's as professional as a mic. It's amazing.
Well, you know, we could probably get you a few behind-the-scenes little interviews with whatever celebrities we have on the subject of why they're supporting the charity and why they believe so much in, you know, what we do. We'll work on that. We'll make it part of our plan. It'll be fun.
All right. So I guess we'll have to have you back on in March, and I'll contact your agent about that, and we'll stay in touch. And remember to follow me on Twitter, and you have a few Twitter things, so we
yeah,
can
yeah, I am at Leah Black Miami, and anybody that adds me at Leah Black Miami, I read them all, every one of them. I usually reply to most of them. If they put R-H-O-M, that's Real Housewives of Miami, then, of course, I always comment back because I kind of figure it's my job. I always take my job seriously.
Well, absolutely, and I understand, and it's an honor, and definitely we'll stay in touch, and hopefully I can make the event in April, and thanks again for calling.
Well, let me know. And I had a ball talking to you. You're fun, and I enjoyed every second of it. Time flew by.
Hey, well, and remember, right. You can always come on the show, so you're welcome. So take
Anytime
care.
Anytime you call me. Anytime someone doesn't show up, consider me your filler.
Oh, hey, that's an honor for a celebrity like Leah Black. Listen up, guys. I told you I'm going to be the king of celebrity interviews, just like I'm the king of education media. So thanks again for calling, Leah, and
God,
we'll be in touch.
It's so funny you call me a celebrity. I call myself a big mouth personality, but I like the title anyway.
All right, take care, Leah. Okay.
Thank bye-bye. You so much.
Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Celebrity Spotlight Show on the Toll Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Well, I love the celebrity show, but one of my first celebrities that really I've been doing regular interviews with, and every time, Kat Cramer has just blown me away with all the different projects she has. And I learned so much from her, and I said, you know what? If she can do it, I can make a difference as well. So I want to welcome the program, Kat Cramer. Kat, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. I'm excited, excited about 2013. Lots of important projects coming up with my...
Yeah, this is our first show of the new year.
Exactly. And I'm excited to be saying I could spend it with you every month about different things. But I wanted to first touch upon one something that, you know what, it speaks to me. I want bullying to end in schools. It's just an absolute, just terrible what's happening. But I understand that there's a really great honor that the movie Bully's getting, and can you tell me a little about it?
Yes, Bully, you know, the film that came out earlier this year, which was very controversial. It also went through the whole ratings thing, and it's Harvey Weinstein got behind the film, and we, you know, every year we give the Stanley Kramer Award that my mother established in 2001, actually, the year my father passed away, but the first one was given in 2002. But every year we give it to a socially significant film or filmmaker and or human, you know, person, human being that's carrying on my father's legacy of expressing themselves through film and through what their activism and carrying on the torch for, you know, for being socially conscious. It's always gone to a film. Just last year we actually gave it to Angelina Jolie for her movie In the Land of Blood and Honey. And the year before that, Sean Penn got it for his work in Haiti and it's for being an activist. He was the first individual to receive the award.
Wow.
And there's been several, you know, Good Night and Good Luck got it, and Inconvenient Truth, Milk. The first one was I Am Sam,
Hotel
Rwanda. I love
that movie. Yes.
Yeah, and it's actually Sean Penn has been involved with three of them, being getting it for I Am Sam, the first one. When he got it for Milk, you know, he was in those two films, and then he got it as an individual. Denzel Washington has actually received it twice for directing, his debut as a director and the Antoine Fisher story, and then, of course, The Great Debaters. You know, there's been several of them that have actually gotten it a couple of times simply because they're socially conscious filmmakers. You know, Jim Sheridan for In America, which was more of a human story. One year we had Hotel Rwanda and Innocent Voices. It was a double header, two movies that were selected. But they've always been films that, and, you know, it usually is, when we first started giving the award, there weren't that many socially conscious films. And I think the award has actually, you know, inspired people to strive, you know, not that they, well, it is coveted, but I mean, it, you know, there's not that many Stanley Kramers out there, I have to say. And since we've been giving out the award, there's a lot more socially conscious films and filmmakers. So hopefully that has started the ball rolling, and there'll be more of that in the future, carrying on my dad's legacy. So this year it's going to Bully, and you know I have a history with that whole, not only the issue, but having had the world premiere of Teacher Children Well for my last official screening for Kat Cramer's films that changed the world. And then Bully came out like right a few months later. And the films are, you know, they're both similar in the sense that they're for the issues. The only thing that Bully's a feature, full-length documentary, and Teacher Children Well is a short. But they're both very important films, and Bully's come under a lot of controversy. It always was when it first was released. And, you know, recently there's been a lot of, like, a couple of the people, the kids in the film, actually, one of them has Asperger's syndrome, and the parents were you know, not too happy that that wasn't touched upon in the film. They felt that the bullying should have been expressed more through the fact he was being bullied because of that and not just because he was being bullied. But, you know, I agree, but I also disagree because many people are bullied for different reasons. So bullying is bullying, and I don't feel that while they have a point, and a lot of these Asperger's syndrome and autism groups have been attacking the film, the fact that the kids are just being bullied mainly because they're different, and they don't, you know, they're not specific as to why, it's just that they're being bullied, that makes a really strong point.
Exactly.
So, I mean, even though there's other films that were good for the award, there's always a handful of wonderful films that have social issues that are relevant. I cannot think, and I even from dealing from personal experiences, I'm sure you know, and having had Teach Your Children Well and being involved with that whole campaign to get that film out there, and then also, you know, attending the premiere of Bully and meeting the filmmakers and meeting the people in the film and getting behind that too, I can't imagine another issue that's affected at least our country and the world over the last couple of years as prevalent as bullying crisis. There just really hasn't been anything.
Never. You know? Yeah. And I think that it's a perfect film to come out. Here's the reason why I think so is because it's just something that's not ending and it's getting worse. And people are and schools take a blind eye to it. Teachers ignore it. Sometimes parents that have the bully in their family doesn't do anything about it, and they still have this old school attitude, Kat. Oh, that's how they learn to grow up. This kind of treatment. Everyone was bullied. It's just a part of life, and that's not the case at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it never goes away. And, you know,
right.
Like bullying's always existed, but for some reason, it is because of the internet and cyber stalking and just the climate of things. There just seems to be, unfortunately, the bully sides are getting younger and younger, and it seems like every so many weeks you hear about even the shootings that have been taking place. And the one recently when the 16-year-old shot the student was because he had bullied him. And that just happened, I think, last week.
Right.
It's never, you know, all these films can do is educate, and there's different ways of approaching it. But it's been just a tragedy that our nation has faced, and now it is a world crisis. It isn't just in our country.
Well,
You know, I just feel that it's a perfect film to give the award to. I think my father would have definitely tackled bullying had he been alive today. He would have made a film like it, and he would have in some way he would have addressed the issue. And you know, you say you speak from personal experience. I mean, I had at my premiere of Teach Your Children Well all the leading groups like the Trevor Project, the It Gets Better Project, Facing History and Ourselves. They were all represented on the panel, and they do such wonderful work. And you know, I really made a mark, I have to say, with that. And now that film is going to be finally getting out there. Being a short documentary, you know, it's a very specialized type of film where Bully is feature length. But Bully was a film that was released in theaters, and it's become the film. There's other films on the subject, but that really has been become like the main film, I think, that got out there the most and made the most impression just because of the campaign they did. But Teach Your Children Well really is perfect to be seen in schools, churches, PTA groups, because it's the right length and it's so educational and just makes
right.
so much impact.
And Lily's involved in it too, and that
of
really
course.
Helped. Yeah.
Yeah, well, Lily Tomlin narrates it, and she also was an anti-bullying activist, among other things. You know, we did CNN together to promote Teach Your Children Well. We did many shows, And I interviewed her, too, about her background with bullying. And while she was never bullied herself, her own brother was. And so she knows that experience from, you know, just growing up with him. And I myself was bullied. And, you know, I have to say that bullying in the workplace and
yes.
even in the entertainment industry, I find that while this bullying problem is happening mainly in the schools, it seems to be also increasing other places. And there's so much adult bullying that goes on in jobs that that's another thing that I think needs to be addressed.
Definitely.
I know the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles has the It Gets Better Project musical, an anti-bullying musical project, which is going to be, they're having an opening here in L.A. On February 1st, and then I think it's going to be touring. That's another great thing is that they're actually doing a musical, an anti-bullying musical. And when we have the Stanley Kramer Award on the 26th, there will be, you know, I'm not going to give it away, but I know it'll be a special presentation. It always is, you know, I have to say there's many awards given out on the evening, but that one's always stood out as being very special just for the nature of it. And we've had a lot of marvelous presenters. I mean, Harrison Ford actually presented to Al Gore when he got it for An Inconvenient Truth a few years ago.
Wow.
And that was like the only time he appeared except when he won the Academy Award, so it was just like a highlight of the night. And there's been, you know, it's just been a special moment. So I'm not going to give anything away, but I have really high hopes for it.
Well, I hope that definitely the event goes very well, and I'm glad to talk about it. But and I'm glad we touched upon specifically bullying in certain ways. I mean, it speaks to all of us. I'm going to say this straight out, Kat, that my daughter's been bullied this year, and she's in second grade. And it's just because it's become so well-known in certain ways that still people don't understand. Exclusion is definitely part of bullying. Little
things. How long has she been bullied? Has it just started?
It just started. We're trying to... And that, especially my wife being a teacher at the school, and I used to teach there, and hopefully it's going to end, but something took place, and this is funny how I kind of air my dirty laundry, but I'm not afraid to, because I want people out there all over the world that are listening to this program to understand you have to stand up for this. My daughter went to a daddy-daughter dance with me, and her friends excluded her after hanging out with her and just left her right at the dance. And I was infuriated, but yet I went to my wife and I said, this has to stop.
Is bullying. That's true. When they exclude someone or there's discrimination, that's a form of bullying. Well, people don't see it that way, but it is. What about the teachers? Because, you know, the whole thing I'm behind is that the teachers don't take the responsibility and neither do the parents. That's obviously where it's coming from.
Yes.
The kids don't just do this on their own.
Well, I agree, and hopefully that'll get addressed, and they're addressing it in certain ways. But there are some fantastic schools that have a zero tolerance for bullying, but other schools
that's happening a lot. Fortunately.
Yeah, I'm glad that's happening. But again, at one point, it's very difficult for them if they've continued it throughout to go into the high school and middle school where the virtual and all these terrible acts and different things. So I agree with you, but I'm speaking on this as the third bullying topic I've had this week on my network, and I'm just here to say it has to stop. I was bullied. I know my wife was bullied, and I know that you said you were bullied maybe as a kid or possibly as an adult. So we need to stop this, because what I really believe getting physically beat up is not as bad as mentally, because what it is a constant, constant thing where you really, truly, it can lead to depression. It can lead to suicide. So we have to understand that words really do hurt.
Yes. Now, what exactly are you doing still with your daughter in the situation?
Well, my wife went to the principal, who's her boss, so that's a very hard line to follow, and they've had a conversation, and hopefully it's going to be addressed. I'm hoping so, or she said, my husband's going to be up here. So hopefully that will stop. So I'm keeping my hope up that it's over, and it doesn't occur, because I have other girls, if my wife keeps teaching, that will go to the school, because I have three girls, the one is in school, and then I have a boy. So I want it to be a place where hopefully this is something where it's happening to a teacher's daughter, that this will end it right here and hopefully change the environment where she's at right now.
Well, the other interesting thing is that this happens to be, believe it or not, he had my sister and me when he was much older, but it's my father's centennial this year. He would have been 100 if he were still around.
Oh, wow.
And it's we have a lot of celebrations and things coming up. And it's interesting that this film, you know, being the year of his centennial, that a movie as powerful as Bully with a subject, as I said, that's so far-reaching and, you know, so in the forefront of the issues right now, that would be the film that would be selected. And I just couldn't think of a more perfect issue to be addressing. But it's also, on a lighter note, the 50th anniversary officially this year of It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. You know, we had the big pre-anniversary event at the Academy over the summer last year that Billy Crystal hosted, with my mom and most of the comedians, pretty much all of them that were still alive from the film. It was a sold-out big like premiere, actually. It opened the 70-millimeter film festival at the Academy for their summer program. Well, it was just announced today that the official 50th anniversary of Mad World will be held at the Turner Classic Movie Film Festival here in Hollywood. The date hasn't been set yet, but the festival runs April 25th through 28th. So if you look online, now is the time to start getting passes for the whole festival. And it's going to be very exciting. It's actually opening on the 25th with, I think, The Restoration of Funny Girl, one of my favorite films.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Mad World's going to be part of it, so we're really excited. That was just announced today. And there's going to be an honor for my father later. I don't want to give all those details away yet, either till it's officially announced, but an honor for my father later in the fall. And a retrospective, we're working on a documentary, and there's going to be, you know, a series of, like, salutes and tributes. And it's going to be very exciting.
Well,
sure, I'll give you the scoop firsthand when I get it.
that's why I love having the opportunity to interview you, to really learn about what's the upcoming projects, because it seems like always very, very interesting things. If we would go back to our interview in December and all the things that we could talk about as well, but everything else comes up left and right, and like, oh, cool, this is coming up, and this, and then, so I think that's fantastic with your father's anniversary to talk about that, and especially Mad World, and also I want to talk about, and I know you've been very humble talking about others tonight, about your one-woman show. I know you're pumped up about this and excited.
I am, and I'm going to be introducing some characters in it, you know, new characters, and I'm not going to give away too much until it's ready, but that is my main project for the year, among other things. And, you know, I'm launching an evening with a trailblazer coming up, too, in the spring, so I'll let you know the details on that. But, yeah, my show is definitely the Labor of Love project. It also ties in with my album and my web series. It's like a three-part. It's all connected to that theme, and more will be revealed coming up. But I will say it's also the 50th anniversary of the Rolling Stones, and they're going to be touring again, and my show does have a little bit to do with Mick. You know, my album is about Mick Jagger and his solo material. So once everything's together, you know, I'll be able to share more. But it's still a work in progress, so I don't want to give away too much, spoil too much of the surprises either.
Well, you seem like you're one of the hardest working people in Hollywood with all the different things you're doing.
I try.
Well, I completely think so, because of all the different things. I get other celebrities on, they have one or two projects. You have probably seven or eight, and you're impressed by me saying, oh, I remember what we talked about before with the other opportunities, and it's just a lot of fun talking to you, and I really think it's going to be fantastic, the award, and for Bully, and really speak when you get the opportunity. I'd like to have the director or someone involved in Bully to come on the show, because I think that would be a fantastic interview for the network.
Yes, yeah, Lee Hirsch is the director, and Cynthia Bowen, the producer, they're both going to be accepting the award. And, you know, they're honoring, not only do they have the nominated films, the biggest thing about the Producers Guild is really a precursor of normally what wins the Academy Award, because they have, most of the same films are nominated, and that's representing the producers. So a lot of times the one that wins the Producers Guild feature, the main award of the, you know, that wins the Oscar. But they're also giving a special award that night to Harvey and Bob Weinstein called the Milestone Award. Tim Bevan and Eric Fellner are getting the David O. Selznick Achievement Award, and Russell Simmons is getting the Visionary Award, and one of my favorites, J.J. Abrams, is getting the Norman Lear Achievement Award in television.
Wow.
And then, of course, Bully. So, you know, they give a number of different awards. My father actually received the Milestone Award himself several years ago, before the Stanley Kramer Award was established. And they also honor, you know, the best documentaries, television. It's probably one of the biggest guild events of the year. And we're just really honored to be a part of it. So, you know, but we don't usually give even though I screen documentaries for my series, we don't usually give documentaries the Stanley Kramer Award. Just because my father, you know, really, he never made documentaries. He made features and occasionally did some television, but mainly he was a feature filmmaker. That was his main, that's just mainly what he did. But sometimes documentaries are the film that brings the issue closest to home and really explores the issues more than features do, you know, in terms of that narrative. It just, and also it follows in that format of you. What I like about Bully is that they do explore different kids, the lives of them, and it takes you through the journey of what they're going through at the moment while they're being bullied. And they all come from different places and different walks of life and different situations. And I think it's that through line connecting all of them that makes the movie so strong.
And hopefully it changes people's lives and it makes teachers stop ignoring, makes principals not make sure that they handle the situation. That's my hope. And I think that what you're doing is fantastic, and it's fantastic that that award's going to be received. And let's give them kudos to make sure that we can end this problem. So, Kat, again, fantastic interview. I really enjoyed talking to you. Where can we find more information on you, learn more about what you do?
Of course, my website, CatherineKramer.com. That's my full name, CatherineKramer.com. My new website, Kat Kramer's Films That Changed the World.com, and that's all spelled out. Twitter is Catherine Kramer, and then my four Facebook pages, my main page, personal page, actually, Catherine Kramer, Kat Kramer's Films That Changed the World, Kat Kramer, and then the Catherine Kramer Fan Club, which someone started for me, which is an interesting little fan group of supporters. So, you know, there's content on all four pages. But I guess Kat Kramer's Films That Changed the World and the Catherine Kramer page are probably the most current with information. And then, you know, when I launch some of these other projects, the content will be present there.
Right. You have a lot.
Just Google me.
Yes. We can find you anywhere. And also the funny thing is that always there's something more going to be going on. And I bet you we can miss things and say, oh, we didn't talk about that. But that's why always next month we'll talk to you again, unless something huge happens before February. And we'll have you back. If it's early in February, no big deal.
Yeah, because I expect there's going to be a lot of announcements over the next couple of months for sure.
Hey, and I'm going to be in L.A. in March for an event, so I'll be out there the third week
Great.
Of March
well,
in L.A.
Mom and I are actually doing a mother-daughter workshop March 20th, but I wanted to wait till it's officially announced next time we talk. But right now it's scheduled for March 20th, so that will have to do with, I really can't give it away till it's officially announced at the end of the month.
So maybe we'll get to do a one-on-one interview right next to each other with the video camera. So never know.
Awesome.
That would be really cool. And that's what's so great about how the internet makes you, and I guess technology makes you kind of create relationships with people just based on circumstances. And it always is great. And have that relationship with trying to end bullying. That's fantastic, Kat. But all the other projects are fantastic as well. So thanks again for calling, and look forward to talking to you in February.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care, Kat. Okay. Bye-bye. All right. You're listening to Total Education Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. And I'm really excited, always excited, and I want to give a shout-out to my great friend Vita Ghaffari for now being a publicist in a certain way to reach out to Hollywood, because I've not had really many TV stars. But he's a comedian as well, and I'm really excited to welcome the program Jim Meskimen. Jim, thanks for calling.
Hey, my pleasure, Neil. It's great to be on the show.
I'm excited, too. And the show that when we do the celebrity show, it's all about educating people in a variety of ways, promoting certain projects. And I think that I want to talk about specifically what you're doing with your latest project. But tell us specifically what set have you been on this week? So our listeners know some of the background. You've been in a lot of movies, but your latest reoccurring role, tell us about that. Then we'll get right into your Jim Impressions.
Oh, thanks very much. Well, yeah, I've been fortunate enough to be recurring on what I think is one of the best shows on television, which is NBC's hit comedy Parks and Recreation, which stars Amy Poehler and Rashida Jones, and I think Rob Lowe now as well. And it's, you know, I'm not on the show very often, but when they call, I'm so happy to go on. I play a character. It's pretty funny. His name is Martin Housley. He is an MC, basically. So whenever they go to have a fundraiser or some kind of banquet, there was a beauty contest one time and a telethon. I'm there. And part of what I think me and the writers have sort of created together is the fact that Martin Housley is a sort of full of himself, but he's also kind of a fancies himself an impressionist, which is interesting because I actually am an impressionist, right? But I try to do kind of low rent, not real great impressions in the show. Nothing really spot on that I do in my own show, but this stuff like Nixon, you know, that everybody does, and they do it a little badly, you know. So it's a whole lot of fun. I've done 5 episodes, and I'm always happy when they call me back.
Well, it sounds like it, Jim, and I think it's so cool. And I want, again, being an education show, the way that this education show works is I really got into interviewing celebrities, and I said, well, I'm going to do a celebrity show. And it's hard to book 4 to 5 celebrities a week, Jim. That's a battle in itself, but it's so much fun having people come on a regular basis. And I'm excited that we just talked about having a monthly role on the show, so the network, so you can kind of give us updates of your projects. So I guess the question I have to ask you is, again, impersonations, impressions. Tell us how did that start in your life?
I've always had an interest in the facility in it. My mother is an actress, and so I saw how she would, could embody characters and stuff. So I was just curious and interested in it, and I love the voice. And so when I was a little boy, I would, like a lot of kids, I'd imitate
Cali, this bunker, we're in a family,
and of course Nixon at the time. Nixon was an actual figure that we heard on the news every day, and that's my good Nixon. I do several Nixons. I do the big Nixon, or Parks and Recreation, and then I do the Frank Langella Nixon, because I was in Frost Nixon with Frank Langella. And I have a variety of styles. But for me, it was just a hobby. It became a career. I do other things as well, but I find that I've had many opportunities come to me just because I do impressions. I was on Whose Line Is It Anyway because I did impressions, the British version. I was on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air because I did impressions. And, I've done little bits on Letterman and Leno and Kimmel and Conan. And they're all generally celebrity voices. So I don't consider myself a celebrity by any means. But
You are one.
Infected with a lot of celebrities, which is even better.
Well, I consider definitely a celebrity. You belong in this show. And educating people how you came up with them, I guess, when you were a kid. I want to know. Let me give you an example. And I was on had a puppeteer on my show last week, the Total Education Spotlight Show. And it was hilarious, Jim. And basically, I went ahead and did some of my impersonations. I fouled up my Kermit the Frog. But I will do my Yoda impression.
Very interesting. The dark side.
So it's hard when I'm doing a radio show to try to do it, but I can do also other ones, but more cartoon characters because that's what I grew up. So what made you want to impersonate people? I'm sure you were a class clown in school, weren't you?
Well, I wasn't. I was sort of shy. I was also the kid that sat in the back and drew pictures. I'm a cartoonist, so I was kind of a silent anarchist in school. And it wasn't until a lot later, after I'd studied improv in New York, that I felt confident enough to drag out these impressions. And, of course, in improv, if someone drags you out and says, "So, President Reagan, what do you think about this?" You can't. You have to do it. You can't hide or fudge it or say, "Well, I'm actually not President Reagan. I'm just a guy who looks like it." You have to go in there and, embody that character because no one else will.
And so now, when I do things like Morgan Freeman for The Tonight Show, I do James voiceovers like that, But it's fun. It's just a game, and it's a game that I can win at, most of the time, so I love to play it. So that's why I created this one-man show, Jimpressions,
which is going to perform once a month at the Acting Center in Hollywood. And Impressions is like 90 minutes of celebrity impressions and stories from Hollywood and my experiences.
Oh, wow.
With these actors, and some of which, you know, I've known and worked with, and others that I've just observed and admired. And it has music, it has comedy and improv and all kinds of stuff, and it's a whole lot of fun. The first show is on February 2nd in Hollywood. And if people go to jimpressions.net, they can get the full schedule and see videos and so forth. There's a sort of a, you can get a kind of a grip on an impression sometimes. I think that's why cartoon characters are somewhat easier to do, because 9 out of 10 times these voice actors voicing those characters are drawing on other performers or other nuances from other celebrities to create, you know, a new, maybe a hybrid character, which is what Dan Castellaneta did with the Homer Simpson, combining Walter Matthau and some other character, I think, to create that wonderful, wonderful voice of Homer. But, you know, it's just fun. I do enjoy it. I'll check that out. I do enjoy, you know, like there's certain performers that I've always loved, you know, like the incredible Woody Allen. I've enjoyed since the 60s, you know, but very small prepubescent. And, you know, for me, it's always, you know, effective to, you know, express myself in this way, but I'm very undecided.
Yeah. Yes. How about let's talk about Jerry Seinfeld. Do you do Jerry, by the way? Do you?
I do a little Seinfeld, sure.
Let's hear it.
Oh, nothing. I mean, what's the deal with Jerry Seinfeld anyway? I love Jerry Seinfeld. I auditioned and finally got on the Seinfeld show towards the end of its run, and unfortunately they cut my scene. It was about a 70-page script, and as you probably know, TV scripts are usually about 40. So they overwrote the hell out of this thing. They hired a bunch of people and let us all go. But I admire Jerry a lot. And in fact, we had the same improv teacher back in New York. So I think he's a great, great comedian and a great human being.
Well, and it's funny, I had Peter Melman on my show a couple weeks ago for the Author's Corner show, and he was one of the main writers of Seinfeld. And we had a blast talking stories about things. I don't know if you've ever ran into Peter in Hollywood at all, but he's a very good guy and an interesting character, and his one book coming out. So that's what's so fun about it. I feel like Hollywood's my second home from Pittsburgh, and I've never been there and since I was a little kid.
Wow.
So I'm really excited to be traveling out to L.A. just to say, you know what? All the people I connect with out in L.A. So let me give you one other impersonation. So, you know, an impression. You know, it's kind of funny, Jim. I'll be able to just, we can interview each other, and you're educating people on how you came up with these characters. Let's talk about, I guess, a mainstream character right now. Have you worked on Honey Boo Boo or any of the other people trying to impersonate? How about Sugar Bear? Sugar Bear.
I did Honey Boo Boo for the Jip Jab. You bring the
I don't know if you still, I do the voices for the Jip Jab animations, the famous election ones that they had, and also the year in review. I usually am singing it there. They said, "Can you do Honey Boo Boo?" I went, "I don't know. Put it on YouTube. Let me see." I had no idea who this person was.
Oh, it's
cute little Southern girl.
It's a train wreck, man. If you've listened, watched the show, but guess what? I'll say this, Jim. I was ripping apart the Real Housewives of New Jersey when my wife forced me to watch the show, just like she forced me to watch Honey Boo Boo, and I've had Real Housewives on my show now. So I better watch what I say, and then they come back and with the tape.
But we're all just trying to make noise and get noticed and somehow improve the world. So it's ill behooves us to speak ill of one another.
So let's think about specifically some other characters. You've never saw Sugar Bear, and that's the even funnier one. But you'll have to, Sugar Bear's Honey Boo Boo's stepdad. He's funny. Nothing on that yet. So what would you say another mainstream character going on right now that's in the news that you really do a good impression on? Who would you say?
Professionally speaking, I really like Ricky Gervais. I've been an admirer of his for a long time on The Office, British show. Fantastic. And although he's gotten to be a bit of a mischief maker on this side of the pond, I don't always agree with what he says. I still think he's tremendously talented. And I like Ricky Gervais.
You're hilarious, man. This is a blast. Again,
it's also, speaking of Ricky Gervais, also brings to mind the Golden Globes. And George Clooney, and we saw George Clooney there this year, And it seemed to me that he was a lot less tense, which was nice. You know, he didn't have so much riding on it, not so much on his shoulders. But he's another guy I have a tremendous amount of respect for. And if I look, you know, even slightly like him, I think my life would be happier.
Oh, Mike, this is just fantastic. And so you're on your show, because, again, people have to go to JimPressionsShow.com.
.net.
And check it out. And what I want all my listeners to go out and do that, but I also want them to check it out for the simple fact that hopefully if you're out in LA to go to the event and check it out, because I think any one person show is a challenge, isn't it? It's not the easiest thing in the world to do for an hour.
No, it's a workout, and I really love it. It's really fun. I wrote it, and we've been polishing it now for a year or so, and I've taken it all over the world. I've done it in Australia and England and Canada, and I hope to go to, I'm going back to Adelaide, Australia to do it this year. I was in Mexico in November doing it. That was interesting. I had to do some Spanish language impressions that went pretty well.
Oh, my.
Which I blithely volunteered for, and then I kind of sweated it out. But I did, I did Antonio Banderas, for example, and several others. So it was a challenge, but a lot of fun. Luckily, I speak a little Spanish. So
well, how about politically? Do you do Rush Limbaugh? Can you do a Limbaugh?
Yes, indeed, Neil. I do do Rush Limbaugh, but he says, you know, he doesn't seem to be quite, doesn't have so much to swing at. But maybe he does, I don't know, but I'll listen to him every morning like so many of the aficionados.
This is just the best. This is one of my best interviews ever. I can't wait to talk to you again. I could just...
You're a perfect audience member. You're a guy who loves impressions.
But again, this is an education show. So I just tell you, I do good in impressions, but they're just really just hilarious in specific ways of not specific people, but, you know... let me talk about when Jim, I was in down south, and basically I love the Giant Warrior. The Giant Warrior was my favorite wrestler. I couldn't wait to get a picture with him and get a little bit of a photograph with him. And he was my favorite, the Giant Warrior. So I would do, you know, Southern types of things, and I would get in trouble as well, Jim, because I would rip on West Virginia. Because, you know, West Virginia's right across the way.
Be very careful. I tell you something, Neil, particularly in the world of wrestling and bodybuilding, you have to be very careful of who you're making fun of, huh? Because it can come back, you know, and bite you in an unpleasant place.
How about Mike Tyson? I did a decent one.
How about Mike Tyson? What about Tyson? What are you going to say? All we know is, you know, he's got that tattoo now, so that's strange. What's that all about? No, I mean, was he even cognizant when I had that tattoo made? I don't know.
So maybe I need to challenge you, Mike, to a match. Again, a former professional wrestler versus Mike Tyson. Let's set it up right now, Mike. I'm ready for you.
Okay, I'm ready for you. Yeah, that's fine. You want to go toe to toe, head to head, or ear to teeth? That's fine, man. Whatever you want.
And then, how about Hulk Hogan? That's the last one, because I have a picture of Hulk on my Facebook page. So give me a Hulk.
No, I don't have a good recording of Hulk Hogan in my mind.
He's a deep voice guy, though, right? I mean, does he have a Southern accent? I know he lives.
You sound like you're like Stallone there, bro.
Yeah, Stallone. You just have to swap it up to make Stallone. But I mean, and doesn't Jesse Ventura? Jesse Ventura is another guy. He's got a horse right up like this, isn't he? You know, I've got the kind of an idea of what he sounds like, but I can't, you know, I don't remember exactly. Well, it's not my frame of reference.
All right, well, Jim, I'm having a blast. I think you look forward to talking to me again, but what we want to do the next month is we want to talk specifically about the one-man show in a way of how you educate people. Like if you said, let's go into the 60s and 70s. You know why, Jim? Because I think that can be more of a story on specific characters and how you grew up doing some of those and learning
sure,
from them.
Happy to share some of that with you. And if anyone out there wants to check it out, you can see I've got a lot of videos on YouTube. But if you go to jimpressions.net, you can see all the videos and find out when the show is, read reviews and comments and stuff. And also to subscribe to my newsletter. So I'd love to have any of your listeners go to that site, impressions.net.
Well, Jim, it was an honor to be on the show with somebody. I do some impersonations, impressions that when my kids, when I used to teach in the school bus, and basically talked about Kermit the Frog. So I'd say, and this is the one I fouled up last time. Hi-ho, Kermit the Frog here saying, thanks again, Jim, for coming on the Total Education Network. And goodbye, everybody. And I look forward to talking to you again, Jim. So take care, Jim.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care. All right.